Ireland.
This is the RTE News at One with Brian Dobson. Good afternoon. The headlines this Friday lunchtime. Gardaí investigating the Chrysler service station explosion in 2022 have arrested two men. The Minister for Further and Higher Education, Simon Harris, has said a general election is not on his mind as he seeks to become leader of Fine Gael and then Taoiseach. And the Garda Commissioner, Drew Harris, has responded to criticism of comments he made yesterday about the Garda bicycle case. The news in detail with Susan Jackson.
Gardaí have arrested two men in connection with the investigation into the explosion in Chrysler in County Donegal. 10 people lost their lives, including 3 children. Karen Creed reports.
The arrests were made this morning as part of the investigation into the explosion at the service station and apartment building in Chrysler in October 2022. 4 men, 3 women and 3 young people, all aged between 5 and 59, died in the explosion. The 2 men arrested this morning are in their 50s. They are currently being detained in separate Garda stations in Donegal. They can be held for up to 24 hours. The investigation, led by local Gardaí in Donegal, is being supported by the Garda National Bureau of Criminal Investigation and other agencies, with an incident room set up at Milford Garda Station.
Gardaí in North Dublin have rescued a man who'd been kidnapped in Belfast and arrested 4 men suspected of abducting him. Acting on information from the PSNI, Gardaí stopped a car on the M50 around 10 o'clock last night. The 4 men were arrested and a firearm was recovered. Another man who'd been reported missing in Belfast was found safe and well. The Fine Gael Executive Council is considering bringing forward the closure of nominations for leader. It's understood the executive will meet this lunchtime to discuss when exactly the deadline will be. Under the current process, nominations were set to remain open until Monday afternoon. The Minister for Further and Higher Education, Simon Harris, has promised to give it his all if he becomes leader of Fine Gael and Taoiseach. This morning, the Minister for Public Expenditure, Pascal Donoghue, gave his full backing to Mr. Harris in his campaign. Our Northeast correspondent, Laura Hogan, reports.
Describing the last few days as quite a whirlwind, Simon Harris thanked the outgoing Fine Gael leader and Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, for his leadership. The Minister for Higher Education was attending a breakfast meeting with Fine Gael members in Gormanston, County Meath this morning. He said he was overwhelmed and honoured by the support of his party colleagues in the last number of hours in his bid for the leadership, and he vowed to give it his all if successful. Simon Harris said he wasn't ruling anything in or out, but that a general election is not on his mind, and that he's committed to the programme for government and working with Fianna Fáil and the Green Party. He said if there is no contest, there will be an important period of time before the Dáil returns to consider the personnel in his cabinet, but that was a matter for another day. Simon Harris said he was looking forward to asking everybody to step up and serve in roles that are, in his view, best suited to their talents and abilities if he has the opportunity to serve as leader.
The US Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, has been holding talks on a ceasefire plan for Gaza with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Mr. Blinken is expected to urge Mr. Netanyahu not to carry out plans for a ground invasion of Rafah. More than 1 million Palestinians are sheltering in the city. James Elder of the United Nations Children's Agency UNICEF, who's in Rafah, said it was imperative to implement an immediate ceasefire and allow vital aid into Gaza.
We do need more than one crossing coming in. They need to be opened. This would enable the type of aid we're getting in, food, water, medicine, which is what everyone asks for from the highest levels of the UN, to flood the Gaza Strip with that aid. It's the game changer. It's almost Gaza's last hope is this ceasefire. The idea that there would be no ceasefire and a military offensive here, catastrophic.
The Garda Commissioner, Drew Harris, says he understands that the case of the Garda who loaned a farmer an unclaimed bicycle during the pandemic has caused public concern, and he wants to see what lessons can be learned. Commissioner Harris said he recognised how difficult it must have been for the Garda and his family, but stressed that the Garda had been exonerated and said he wanted to wish him well in his Garda career. Our crime correspondent, Paul Reynolds.
The Garda Commissioner said today he accepted there was public concern over the way a Garda who gave a farmer the loan of a bicycle during the pandemic was suspended and subjected to 4 years of investigation. The Commissioner said he recognises the process has caused difficulties for the Garda and his family, but he insisted it was not his intention to imply any wrongdoing on the Garda's part. Drew Harris also said today that he stood by the decision to call in the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation to investigate the case of a stolen bicycle. The Minister for Justice said she has full confidence in the Garda Commissioner, and while she would not comment on the case, the effect it had on the Garda and his family, or accept what happened was wrong, she reiterated that the process had been far too long, stating that justice delayed is justice denied. Paul Reynolds, RTE News, at the Garda College, Templemore.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. For effective, efficient and balanced warmth throughout your home, choose Grant Uflex underfloor heating. Visit grant.ie.
It'll be fresh and increasingly breezy today with sunny spells and showers. The showers will spread across the country during the day on a strong westerly breeze. Some showers will be heavy with hail. There may be lightning. Highest temperatures will range from 6 to 10 degrees. And there's a warning that northwest winds will increase to gale force 8 at times today on coastal waters from Valentia to Rossom Point to Strangford Lough and on the Irish Sea north of Anglesey. Brian.
Thanks, Susan. Still to come this lunchtime, more on those arrests in connection with the Creasle explosion in October 2022. As prospective Fine Gael leader Simon Harris commits to the programme for government, the party's executive meets this lunchtime to consider bringing forward the deadline for nominations. Russia targets Ukrainian energy supplies in overnight missile and drone attacks. Electricity prices here falling sharply. The latest inflation data also shows a decline in producer prices for food. And the concrete blocks that mimic the coast of County Cork to encourage biodiversity in Dublin Bay.
Please support Cystic Fibrosis Ireland on 65 Roses Day, Friday, 12th of April. You can buy a purple rose in Dunn stores and other participating outlets nationwide or donate online at 65roses.ie.
Trinity College Dublin has been inspiring generations for over 400 years. We now invite you, the next generation of learners, to our Spring Undergraduate Open Day on Saturday, the 23rd of March. Explore our beautiful campus, take a campus tour, and hear from our professors and students. Join us at the Trinity Open Day this Saturday from 10 until 5. Register your interest at tcd.ie/CAO and discover why Trinity is the place for you.
Hello again. You're listening to the news at 1. Two men in their 50s have been arrested in connection with the guard investigation into the tragedy in which 10 people died in Creasle in County Donegal. The arrests were made this morning in the ongoing investigation into the explosion at a service station and apartment building on the 7th of October 2022. Four men, three women and three young people ranging in ages from 5 to 59 died in the blast. Our Northwest correspondent Eileen Magner has been telling us about today's developments.
Well, as you know, this has been a very extensive Garda investigation right since the day of the tragedy on the 7th of October 2022. And it has involved a local Garda. It's been led in Milford Garda Station, but they were supported by the Garda National Bureau of Criminal Investigation and a number of outside agencies like the HSA and the Commission for the Regulation of Utilities. So this morning then, I understand that two men in their 50s were arrested in Donegal. They're being held in two separate Garda stations in the county. Now, they were arrested for alleged offences contrary to the Non-Fatal Offences Against the Person Act, and they're being held for questioning under Section 4 of the Criminal Justice Act. And I understand that under that act, they can be held for up to 24 hours.
Now, separately, Eileen, there was a public meeting last night to publish this Creasle Village plan aimed at regenerating the village. I think you were there.
I was.
What can you tell us about that and what its hopes that can deliver?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, speaking to people there last night, that was their main focus. They see it really as part of their ongoing healing journey, because as we know, there was absolutely huge trauma within this community as a result of losing 10 lives in that awful tragedy. So since the tragedy, there have been a lot of sessions involving the community, consultation with them, involving the County Council, a private company acting pro bono, consultants, ARUP, and the Community Council. And they were really trying to find out, what did people want? How did people see a way forward? How did they think they could help to heal the community? And one of the main things they wanted to see was a place where people could gather. Now, last night they were gathered in a very small hall, but now it looks like, as a result of this plan, which will help to enhance the village in many other ways, you know, including streetscape entrances, but they're also going to get, hopefully, a fantastic looking community centre, which would be a major community hub, and it would have a lot of sporting facilities, a big running track, a football pitch. Then they would have meeting rooms, and also rooms where Father John Joe Duffy told me they would hope to have counselling sessions, because he said he sees this as an ongoing journey which could end up being an intergenerational journey, and that people will for many years to come need some help. And they're hoping that this new focal point, which they're hoping to get government funding for very soon, that will be a significant step in the healing process.
Our Northwest correspondent Eileen Magner. Simon Harris could be anointed the new leader of Fine Gael sooner than expected, as the party's executive meets to consider bringing forward the deadline for nominations. Under the current process, nominations were set to remain open until 1 o'clock on Monday, but it's understood that the executive will meet in about 20 minutes' time to discuss this deadline. Meanwhile, Minister Harris, the sole nominee for the leadership, has said while he's not ruling anything out, a general election is not a priority. Speaking in County Meath this morning, Mr. Harris said that if he becomes leader and Taoiseach, he will remain committed to the programme for government and to working with Fianna Fáil and the Green Party.
I'm humbled, and my commitment to them and my commitment to the people of this country, if given the honour of serving, is that I will give this my all, that I will work day and night. I believe politics is about delivery, it's about people. Sometimes politics in Ireland has gotten a bit too presidential, a bit too personal. Politics is about actually getting things done for people. In many ways, I'm an accidental politician. I ended up in politics when my brother was born with autism, and I was a moody teenager and started campaigning in Wicklow, saying there has to be a better way of providing educational supports for people with autism. I know how politics can deliver for people, and if given the honour of serving, I want to take that can-do approach to getting things done, to renewing our party, to injecting a level of energy, and to anybody who thinks this party is tired, to anyone who thinks this party lacks energy, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Are you ruling out now an election before the end of this year, and will the government go full term?
So there's only one contest I'm involved in currently, and that is to be the leader of the Fine Gael party, which I'm not currently. And I'm conscious that nominations are still open, and that process needs to play itself out in the coming hours. And I'm engaging with members, councillors, TDs, senators, colleagues here today, and indeed in other locations today, and listening to people. And let's see how that process goes in the coming hours and days. If given the opportunity to serve as Fine Gael leader, I will remain committed to the programme for government. I've heard the leaders of the other parties outline their support for the programme for government. This government was never one about personalities or individuals. This was a government about policy, and that shared policy is outlined in the programme for government. So, yes, if given the opportunity to serve, I remain fully committed to implementing the programme for government and to working with colleagues in Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Green Party to deliver for the people of this country.
You're ruling out.
I'm ruling out
an election before the end of the year.
I'm certainly not ruling anything in or out, but it's not my priority at the moment, isn't anything about elections. My priority was the election of the leader of Fine Gael. My priority then, should I be given the opportunity to serve, is to work with Fianna Fáil and the Green Party to deliver on the programme for government. And certainly a general election is not in any manner or means on my mind. The people of this country want us to get on with their business and deliver for them.
Have you made any decisions in terms of any upcoming cabinet reshuffles? And are any of your cabinet colleagues in bother? Should they be concerned? And is Simon Coveney vulnerable?
So I'm not the leader of Fine Gael today, so sorry about this, but there's a contest for the leadership of Fine Gael. Nominations are still open, and when that process closes, our party will make an announcement as to who the next leader of Fine Gael is. Should it be me, I'm really looking forward to serving. If there isn't a contest, as is the working assumption, that will provide the new leader of Fine Gael with a period of space between becoming the leader of Fine Gael and then ultimately seeking to put together a government in Dáil Éireann and ask Dáil Éireann for a mandate. And that would be, I think, a very important period of time for that leader.
Are you thinking about who your team will be?
I think about lots of things. We have a very talented parliamentary party, and I'm really looking forward to having the opportunity to showcase those talents in coming days and weeks, but that's a matter for another day. I have great colleagues that I serve with every single day. Helen McIntyre is a great colleague. I'm looking forward to asking everybody to step up and serve in the roles that are, in my view, best suited to their talents and their ability to deliver, should I have the opportunity to serve.
Simon Harris speaking in County Meath this morning. Meanwhile, outgoing Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has dismissed conspiracy theories around his surprise resignation. Speaking in Brussels, Mr. Varadkar said there was no scandal behind his decision.
I think the question you're asking me is there some sort of scandal that's about to break that I'm aware of, and there isn't. Is a straight answer to that. I understand the need for conspiracy theories and for speculation, but that's simply not the case. That's not to say that somebody isn't going to throw some allegation at me tomorrow, next week, or in a few months' time that I'm not aware of now. That will probably be a load of rubbish, like most of them are. That people will then turn around and say, aha, that was the real reason. But, like, that's not, if you want to do that, fine, but look, that's not the case.
The Taoiseach speaking in Brussels this morning. Well, let's get the latest on all this now from our political reporter, Tommy Mescal, who joins us from our Oireachtas studio. Tommy, first of all, this news just breaking in the last little while, information that's come to hand to you that the Fine Gael executive is meeting quite soon to discuss, it seems, the deadline for nominations for the leadership.
That's right, Brian. They'll meet at 1:30 this afternoon. And the reason for this is that nominations under the current process are due to remain open until 1 o'clock on Monday afternoon. But it looks like a certainty now that Simon Harris will be the only candidate. And so the question arises, what's the point in waiting that time to declare the winner? They will meet this afternoon. I understand that they could bring forward the deadline as soon as today or possibly Sunday. And this is all with the view of being able to create an event around the selection convention that's due to take place on Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. They will be having a selection convention in Athlone to select their European candidates. And the Fine Gael party, I think, wants to be in a position to announce Simon Harris as their leader, to give him an opportunity to make a speech and to begin the phase of his leadership.
Mm. Already quite a bit of speculation and discussion around Simon Harris's options in terms of government formation, if and when he is elected by the Dáil as Taoiseach, and on the Fine Gael side, who might be in, who might be out. And a lot of that's centering on the situation in relation to Minister Simon Coveney.
A lot of speculation this morning, Brian, in newspapers as well as to the future of Simon Coveney and others too. You heard Simon Harris there speaking in Meath saying that he wouldn't be drawn on it. And I think from speaking to people in the Simon Harris camp, I don't think they have given serious thought to cabinet reshuffle just yet. They're not ruling anything in or out. But Simon Coveney was speaking to our Southeast editor earlier this morning, and he was asked about his thoughts on his future in cabinet. We can hear that now.
It's no secret there's a lot of ambition in Fine Gael. Lots of people want to be in the cabinet. And so there'll be all sorts of stories that people will be reading and writing over the next couple of weeks as we move towards what a new Fine Gael element to this government may or may not look like under Simon Harris as a new leader. And let's wait and see how that transpires, but I'm not going to fuel any rumours, I have to say.
Do you want to be in Simon Harris's cabinet?
Pascal, I'm not getting into to publicly talking about that. Any conversations I have with Simon Harris will be had initially in private. I'm not going to start lobbying publicly.
Simon Coveney. Well, Tommy Mescal, on this programme about this time yesterday, we had the statement from Pascal Donoghue, the Minister for Public Expenditure, that he wouldn't be putting his name forward as a candidate for the leadership. And today has come from him an endorsement of Simon Harris.
Yeah, he was speaking in Brussels where he's attending a meeting of Eurogroup ministers, and he said that he would be backing Simon Harris. He spoke of Simon Harris's qualities, and he felt that he would be an excellent leader and an excellent Taoiseach. So, Pascal Donoghue was also asked about whether he felt that he was in a good position to remain in cabinet. He said that that would be a matter for the new Taoiseach, but he did say that he would like to continue in his role, pointing out too that to remain as Eurogroup president, it would usually be the case that you would have to be some form of a finance minister. He is, of course, the public expenditure minister at this time. So many people would speculate that it probably would be a bad move for Simon Harris to remove Pascal Donoghue from his current position.
Right. Tommy Miskell at Leinster House, thanks very much for that. Large areas of Ukraine are without power after the largest missile and drone attack on the country's energy infrastructure since the start of the war. Russia fired almost 90 missiles and more than 60 kamikaze drones, damaging dozens of energy facilities, including power stations. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Russia had moved from what it called a special military operation to a state of war. Christopher Miller is Ukraine correspondent with the Financial Times. He's on the line now from Kyiv. Christopher, thanks indeed for taking our call this lunchtime. Attacks, of course, have been continuing for quite some time on installations in Ukraine, but I suppose what perhaps distinguishes what happened overnight is the scale and how far, how deep into Ukraine these attacks took place.
You're right. These Russian air attacks have been going on now for the better part of 2 years, but these recent attacks over the last 48 hours have been massive in scale. Yesterday's attack Thursday morning targeted the capital Kiev. 31 missiles were shot down by Ukrainian air defenses. But today's, as you said at the top there, included 92 missiles, 65 drones, so 151 weapons of destruction being fired at energy infrastructure in Ukraine. At least 5 people are dead, 14 more are wounded, and authorities have said this afternoon that they're still clearing the rubble from several of these attacks and that people are missing and feared either wounded or dead and possibly buried under this rubble. So this is a really serious wave of attacks. Ukraine is bracing for more.
And what about the capacity of Ukraine to take down some of these missiles? Is there evidence of what we're hearing about, some shortage emerging of munitions?
Yeah, that's right. You know, the Ukrainians have not been bashful about warning that their missile defenses are running low and that they need significant military assistance, particularly from the United States, which is holding up this crucial $60 billion aid package in Congress right now. I think if you look at the number of missiles and the shootdown rate in Kiev yesterday, which was 100% of 31 missiles that were fired at the capital, versus the shootdowns of missiles and other projectiles, including attack drones, elsewhere outside of the capital, Kiev, you know, the percentage is much, much lower. And that means that, of course, the capital is well protected by air defense systems, including the American Patriot missile defense system. But outside, the missile defense systems are much weaker and fewer and farther between. Their munitions are dwindling and they can't shoot everything down. So today, I believe of the 151 missiles and drones that were fired, I think the rate was somewhere around the 60 to 70 percentile mark, which means, you know, dozens of missiles are getting through to their targets and causing mass destruction.
What of this news then from the Kremlin that Russia is moving from what is called a special military operation, people may remember that phrase from the early stages of the war, to a state of war?
Right. You know, Vladimir Putin just, claims to have won a new election, securing him another 6 years in office. And the West has said that this was an election that they do not recognize as free and fair. But it does appear as though Putin and the Kremlin now calling this not a special military operation, but a war, could signal that he plans to step up the war effort in Ukraine. There are reasons to believe, and my sources here in Ukraine are worried that he could mobilize more soldiers. There have been announcements this week from Russia's Ministry of Defense saying that they are forming new military units, and my own sources here in Kyiv say that they are concerned of another large-scale Russian offensive in the coming months.
So with Russian forces then well entrenched in significant areas of eastern Ukraine, is the objective here on the part of the Kremlin, so far as it can be judged, to try and force Ukraine to the negotiating table?
I think that might be part of it, but that has not been an explicit signal or something that has been said by Putin. Rather, he has come out and said very explicitly that his goals have not been achieved, that those goals being the complete capitulation of Kiev and the seizure of all of eastern and southern Ukraine, it remains the goal and objective of Russia and its military. So I think these attacks in eastern Ukraine that they're focusing on right now are partly to undermine the Ukrainians, to weaken them certainly, and make them use up their their dwindling munitions, but also to capture more territory. Putin does want to capture all of Donetsk and Lugansk and Kharkiv regions, where they're focusing their attacks right now, as well as much of the south. And they've been very clear about their desire to take the Kharkiv region and also the Odessa region, which is the home to a very critical Black Sea port for Ukraine.
Right. Christopher Miller, Ukraine correspondent with the Financial Times in Kyiv. Thanks very much indeed for talking to us. Here, four men have been arrested and a firearm seized following a Garda operation in Dublin last night. Armed Gardaí intercepted a BMW car on the M50 shortly before 10 p.m. It's understood a man who had been kidnapped in Belfast was found safe and well during the operation. Our crime correspondent Paul Reynolds joins us now. Paul, what more can you tell us about all of this?
Well, Brian, this all started last night when a call came in from the PSNI after a 36-year-old former sportsman had been kidnapped in Belfast. Now, an alert was put out. The Gardaí began looking for the car, a white BMW. The Dublin Roads Policing Unit, which is based in Dublin Castle, set up checkpoints, sent out units and began searching. And one of their units spotted the car. So the Gardaí, unarmed, stayed back, monitored its movements and called in armed support. And they also kept traffic back as the car was monitored. The car came south from the north via Dundalk and armed units forced it to stop at the M50 junction in Ballymun last night. There were five men in the car. Four of the men in their 20s were arrested. We understand that three of them had been living in Galway and another one in Clondalkin in Dublin. The former sportsman who's from Belfast was found safe and well in the car. The four men were arrested. They're currently being detained under Section 50 of the Criminal Justice Act. That's anti-gang legislation at Garda stations in Dublin. The Gardaí say they're continuing to liaise closely with the Police Service of Northern Ireland. A firearm has been recovered and the Gardaí say that the investigations are ongoing.
And the man who was kidnapped, any information about him?
Well, we know his name. Obviously, we're not going to make it public. The Gardaí and the PSNI will now be trying to establish a motive for this kidnapping. He is a well-known sportsman. He's 36 years of age, but he has retired from the sport that he was involved in.
Now, Paul, separately, you were at a Garda graduation ceremony at Templemore today. Commissioner Drew Harris has been asked there about his comments, which we heard on this programme yesterday, about the case of the Garda who was suspended for 3 years after giving a farmer a bicycle. What more did the Commissioner have to say today?
Well, he said today that he understands that the case of the Garda who loaned the farmer the unclaimed bicycle during the pandemic has caused public concern and he wants to see what lessons can be learned. He says he recognises how difficult it must have been for the Garda and his family, but he stressed that the Garda had been exonerated. He said he stood over his decision, their decision to bring in the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation to investigate the case of a stolen bicycle. But he also said he would wait to see what correspondence he received from the Garda solicitor in relation to his comments at the Public Accounts Committee, but he did say it was not his intention to impute blame to the Garda, and he spoke to us in the last half hour.
So I haven't had the opportunity to study that report. It's been examined by Assistant Commissioner Governance and Accountability, and we want to see from that then what lessons can be learnt for the existing system. Even though it is proposed that there will be new regulations, the existing system will carry on retrospectively in respect of those incidents already under investigation. So there is a point there in terms of how the present process works, and also then I have responsibility then of candour both to the Minister but also to the Policing Authority. We've provided documentation already, and also then we want to report further on the findings of the panel chair. So this is going through a process described in legislation of accountability, and I've done that because I do regard it as an incident which has obviously created public concern and public comment.
Garda Commissioner Drew Harris ending that report from Paul Reynolds. The Competition and Consumer Protection Commission has defended its decision to block a deal by the operators of Dublin Airport to buy a site for a 6,000-space car park near the airport, saying it would reduce competition and increase prices. The DAA was refused permission to buy the car park over concerns it would ultimately lead to higher prices for consumers. The parking spaces, previously run by Quick Park, have been idle since the pandemic. The DAA says it will appeal the decision. However, there remains significant difficulty for consumers and travellers trying to access parking at the airport. Sinn Féin's transport spokesperson Martin Kenny joins us now from our Oireachtas studio. Good afternoon to you, Martin Kenny, and thanks for talking to us.
Good afternoon, Brian.
What do you make of this ruling from the CCPC? Have they got it right, or should it be revisited?
Well, I think it should be revisited, but apart from that, I think the big disappointment here is the delay that this is going to cause. There's over 6,000 parking spaces sitting there that have been empty for the past number of years, which are badly needed. Unfortunately, at Dublin Airport, as you know, we have very poor public transport infrastructure for to bring people to and from the airport. Very many people, particularly travellers from rural Ireland, have to bring their car and they need a place to park. Now, this has been a difficulty all last summer and, you know, we were hoping that this would be resolved. It isn't going to be resolved. One of the things that I called for last year was that in the time that they were considering all of this, that it could be leased to one of the other car park providers so that at least there was a place there for people to use during this period of time. And I think that needs to happen as quickly as possible. We need to get those parking spaces open, regardless of who is managing it or who is running it, even if it is in an interim period until the situation is sorted out. I understand DAA are going to appeal the decision. That's fine. And I would hope that there would be also other car park providers that may be interested in opening and running it and possibly even buying this particular piece of ground, which has been lying idle now since before the pandemic, as you said.
The pressure on parking at Dublin Airport has been evident for quite some time, particularly, of course, since the end of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But it was only about this time last year that the DAA put forward this proposal, or at least that the Competition Commission was notified of this and then asked to carry out its investigation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's like most things in this country that take so long. While we understand they had a job of work to do, you know, for to take almost 14 months for to decide whether or not they could go ahead with this deal, I think was a very long period of time. We would hope that they could be able to do things much, much faster than that. And I think, you know, in the interim now that we have a decision and we don't want to see a situation where this is drawn out longer and longer and longer, I think we need to get this car park open. We need to ensure that there's a service there for people. As I say, very many people going on their holidays, particularly over the summer, mm-hmm. will need somewhere to park their car, and to have 6,200 car parking spaces practically shut off from the public is not good, and it certainly doesn't do anything for the competition and for the other car park providers that are there that can practically charge what they like when you're in a situation that car park spaces at Dublin Airport are so scarce.
The CCPC's finding was that if this purchase went ahead, the Dublin Airport Authority would control more than 90% of car parking spaces serving Dublin Airport. Now, that hardly would be in the interest of consumers, would it?
Possibly not in the long term. That's the decision they've made, you know, and I respect their decision. DAA will also have to if they wish to appeal that, they can do so and put forward whatever grounds they feel is there. But the key thing here is that we need to get the spaces open, that we need people to have space to park their cars when they're going on their holidays, when they're going in business, when they're using Dublin Airport. It's the key airport for the entire country. And, you know, at the moment we have a situation where so many people are in real stress when it comes to trying to find a car park space, particularly if they have to travel at short notice, as can often happen. But in the meantime, you know, we just simply need to get this spaces open. If that means leasing it out or whatever in the interim, that needs to happen. And I think the minister needs to step in and ensure the pressure is put to bear on whatever players are in the field to ensure that can happen.
Martin Kenny of Sinn Féin, thanks very much for talking to us. Back with more after this short break.
Perhaps it's renovations, a return to education, or green upgrades to your home. There may still be things you want to do. If you're a homeowner over 60, a lifetime loan secured against your house from Spry Finance could help you to keep enjoying life. Of course, before you make up your mind, we want you to have peace of mind. For a free consultation in the comfort of your own home, talk to us at 01582 580, or visit spryfinance.ie. Because life never gets old. Over 60s only. Product eligibility criteria apply. Senior Money Mortgages Ireland DAC, trading as Seniors Money, Spry Finance and Spry, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
RTE Radio 1.
Stevie Nicks. One special night. Three Arena, Dublin, July 3rd. Tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie. Don't miss Stevie Nicks live. Tickets available now.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Hello again, you're listening to the News at One. The Russian invasion of Ukraine 2 years ago triggered a surge in global energy prices, feeding an inflationary spiral and a cost of living crisis. But today comes further evidence that the worst of that crisis may be over. New figures from the Central Statistics Office show that wholesale electricity prices fell by more than 15% in the month to February and were 46.8% lower in the 12 months to February. The figures also show that producer prices for food products dropped by 9.3% in the 12 months to February 2024. Well, our consumer affairs correspondent, Joe McGrailey, has been looking over these figures from the CSO. First of all, in relation to electricity prices, a very, very striking and very sharp decline over the last 12 months, Joe.
Yes, indeed, Brian. Obviously, wholesale electricity prices directly impinge upon the domestic prices that people are paying for the electricity that they use in their homes. The wholesale prices rose very, very steeply, especially after the declaration of the Ukraine war. They hit their highest point in August 2022, when they were actually 600% higher than the baseline that the CSO uses. But they've fallen way back since then. They've come right back at this point as of the figures that they give us for February. They're now 56% higher than they were over that baseline, and are very close to what they were in 2021. So is that translating into reductions in our domestic bills is the question. Well, we know already there's been two cuts in the domestic electricity bills, which has delivered around 20-25%, depending on who your supplier is. But the wholesale price is down 47% in the last 12 months to February. So the expectation is that there's certainly scope there, and there, that the hope is that there will be a further reduction in domestic electricity costs based on this continued decline in the wholesale electricity cost.
That surge in energy costs as a result of the war and other factors also, of course, led to inflation in other areas. Construction is one, again, figures today showing that that is beginning to ease, perhaps just a little.
Yeah, just a little. Interesting, obviously, energy costs fed into every sector, of course. The construction materials index that the CSO has published today, that shows that prices in the year were down 0.7%, so not very much at all. But, of course, one of the big reasons that we heard about the costs of housing going up and up and up was because of the very high costs of the materials that were being bought and been purchased to be put into those houses. However, there's a separate index from the CSO as well today, which includes materials but also wage costs. And that actually shows that there's been a slight increase over the year. So it seems one is cancelling out the other more or less, and it's not going to have any great impact on the prices of housing.
Right. And this drop in food producer prices, now this isn't what people we pay in the shops or in the supermarket. This is the prices that are being paid to producers or
yes.
processors.
Yes, this is the cost of producing the food after it leaves the farm, if you like. So it's the cost of processing the food, it's the cost of transport, labelling, all of that. So that price is down by just under 10%, 9.3% in a year. So that's good news as well. We've certainly seen that food prices have been falling in the supermarkets. There's a lot of competition in the Irish market at the moment, but we have seen across the board there have been price falls, and this obviously gives you the evidence that there's scope there for the companies that are producing the food to reduce the prices.
Joe McGrailey, thanks very much indeed for that. Ireland, Spain, Malta and Slovenia are ready to recognise the state of Palestine when the circumstances are right. It follows discussions between the Taoiseach and the Prime Ministers of the three other countries at the European Council meeting in Brussels this morning. Let's talk to our political correspondent Micheál Lehane, who's in Brussels. So what can you tell us, Micheál?
Ireland believe this is a significant development. I suppose it is notable that while the Dáil has voted by a majority to recognise the state of Palestine, it hasn't happened. The government have always said that it wouldn't do so alone, that it would like to act in tandem with other EU states. And it seems this agreement this morning now paves the way for that. And there is a willingness to do so by the four countries when it can make a positive contribution. So I suppose that would suggest that when a ceasefire is in place, it is is being hailed as progress here, and it is something, I suppose, that it follows on too from a fairly strong statement last night from the European Council calling for that immediate humanitarian pause leading to a sustained ceasefire. The Taoiseach speaking in the last while has again emphasised that Ireland began last October as being outliers in its views in relation to what was happening in the Middle East, but it now commands a majority for those views. So things have progressed. I suppose the only question now is how quickly will the four countries, including Ireland, move to grant that recognition?
All right. We shall see. Micheál, thanks very much for that. A series of massive concrete cubes has been deposited along the Great South Wall in Dublin in a bid to boost fish and plant species in Dublin Bay. It's part of a study seeking to develop man-made rock formations that could be used to increase biodiversity. Dr. Paul Brooks is assistant professor in the School of Biology and Environmental Science at UCD and can tell us more about this. So, Dr. Brooks, these are manufactured concrete blocks, massive cubes that are designed to mimic natural rock formations.
They are indeed. I suppose they're a bit of a curiosity for anyone that would be walking down along the Great South Wall, seeing these cubes that sort of stand out. They've only been in the water approximately about 4 weeks, and it'll take time for species to grow on them so that they'll blend in. But I suppose the idea behind these blocks, they're habitat units. They promote species along these artificial structures, and the idea behind them is to enhance the biodiversity that we see along artificial structures, places like the Great South Wall.
Now, I understand that you did quite a bit of research to establish what kind of rock formations would be the most suitable, the most effective, and you found the shoreline in Ringaskiddy in Cork to be what you were looking for.
Indeed, as part of the EcoStructure project, which was an EU-funded project that ran for 6 years, we wanted first to characterise the coastline of Ireland and indeed of Wales and understand what species occur on artificial structures and what species occur on adjacent natural shores. And to do that, we visited and surveyed 32 artificial structures and 32 natural shorelines along the coastline of Ireland and Wales. We quantified the amount of species that were associated with those structures, and then we used what is called photogrammetry, a simple solution. We take some pictures and we can map the underlying topography. Scoring those all out, taking some statistical approaches on that data, we were able to evaluate which topography or underlying topography is best for species. And in an Irish context, Ringaskiddy was the topography that really shone out in terms of promoting biodiversity.
Right. So, as you say, people who want to visit the South Wall in time to come will see seaweed growing on these rocks, perhaps some sea life, marine life. That kind of biodiversity is what you hope will be promoted.
Absolutely. And if people are going down today or over the course of the next few weeks, they'll begin to see a lot of those species forming on those. So there's lots of nooks and crannies associated with that topography from Ringaskiddy. And different species will adhere to different parts of that topography. So things like small crabs, algae, sea anemones, they all like those nooks and crannies. So as that tide recedes, they really like those nooks and crannies to protect themselves as that tide rolls out.
Okay, well, we'll perhaps come back to you in due course and get an update. But for the moment, Dr. Paul Brooks from UCD, thanks so much for that.
Sport on RTE Radio 1.
And it's good afternoon to Greg Allen. Greg.
Afternoon, Brian. The Southampton defender Ryan Manning, he's a late addition to the Republic of Ireland squad for the upcoming friendlies against Belgium tomorrow at the Aviva Stadium and also Switzerland on Tuesday, also at the Aviva. Manning is a left-sided player, so he adds some limited options or options to us down that side of the pitch. Limited options at the moment for the interim manager, John O'Shea, on that side. And John O'Shea confirmed today that he has a fully fit squad. And it's O'Shea's first game in charge in an albeit interim capacity. But it's an occasion tomorrow that the former Ireland captain, who played over 100 times for his country over a period of 17 years, is extremely proud of.
An incredible honour. You, managing your country to get the chance to represent
Ireland from under 15 onwards.